There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It is the Thursday brunch. We are checking out the world's best markets as we get excited for the opening of the farmers market on the terrace this weekend. At the table, we have a panel of producers and good food lovers who will be there tomorrow at the launch of the ninth season of the market. The one and only Mr. Balqis Honey. Hello and welcome back.
Thank you very much. How are you doing, Sally? Love you. Okay. Lovely to be here again.
Yes, Mr. Riyad Hamid. I am well. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks very much. It's a glorious day today. Even better for being on your lovely show.
Thank you. As well as that, of course, we have the food blogger and keen eater. I remember this from last time. This is how you like to be known. You're a keen eater now, Sally Prosser of My Custard Pie. Hello and welcome.
Hello. Nice to be here. It's been a horrible week. I'm so really glad it's Thursday and with the market tomorrow. So this is all good.
It's a perfect start to the weekend, isn't it?
Absolutely.
This is exactly what you want to be doing at 8 a.m. on a Friday morning.
Oh, yes.
And not only that, it's going to be 2 days, but we're going to get more details on that for the first time, isn't it?
Yes,
it's going
indeed,
to be a 2-day market full of glorious, fantastic food. And one of the producers of that glorious and fantastic food who is going to be down there is Carla Thetford. Hello and welcome
That's
to
right.
the show.
Thank you.
You are an artisan cheese maker.
Yep.
What does that mean? Tell us about your story and introduce yourself to us. We want to know who you are, how you got into cheese.
Okay, thank you. So my name's Carla. I'm from Dina Dairy. We produce artisan goat cheese, and we started last year. I realized a lot of the farmers had a lot of goats. They use the goats for the manure to make sure those vegetables and fruits that you eat are fantastic. So I asked them if I could, you know, buy a bit of their goat's milk and see if we could make goat cheese, and we did. And it's been a year of, you know, struggling and working extremely hard.
That can't be easy. But
no, I mean, it isn't. It really isn't.
Do you have a background in making cheese?
I don't come from a farming background, don't come from a cheese making background.
Where did that come from? How did you kind of get to one day going, I'm going to make some cheese? How did you get to that point?
I think I've just been in food my whole life. I've always sold food, made food, enjoyed it. And I always have been involved in the food industry somehow, and I was selling cheese in London for a few winters at a fantastic cheese shop. And when it came time for me to do something different and really something that I loved, that I wasn't going to change, it was back to that cheese shop.
I know when you were going, you made that decision. I was there. You met who is the cheesemaker of the best British cheese in England now. He's just been awarded. You met him, and
who is he?
His name's Roger of White Lake Cheeses. Anyway, he said, "Oh, I'm going on this fantastic immersive course in Italy for a week. You should come, Carla." And she said, "Yes," and she went. That's what happened.
Week. Yep.
I mean, that's how it starts, isn't it? It's just that one encounter because it's stemming all from your passion for cheese, which is how, you know, all of the producers start out. And, you know, everybody here at the table, that's how it starts out for them. But what was that like, going on a cheese making course and discovering that? What did it do to you and how you see the world?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty daunting because I was with a lot of, you know, professional cheesemakers and, you know, people that were actually good at their jobs. And, you know, I was just kind of a hanger-on that was wanting to be somebody. You know, I was just wanting to get involved and see what they were doing, see how they were doing it. If, you know, could I do that? You know, that really big fear of, you know, can I do it? Can it be done in Dubai? It's never really been done in Dubai before. And taking, you know, European style cheeses and making them in Dubai. So, yeah, there was a lot of fear. The course was amazing. You know, Italy's beautiful. But I was the one that had no cheese experience at all. So a lot of those farmers were just looking at me like I was the one carrying the bags. So yeah, it was a bit strange, but amazing course, learned a huge amount, but just left me with a thousand questions as to how I was gonna do it, how could I do it, you know, what practically were going to be the huge problems, and was Dubai, you know, ready for their own dairy? Do you, you know, is there a market for it?
And clearly there is, because Dina Organic Farms has been growing and growing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they
for those who don't know about Dina Organic Farms, tell us a bit more about them.
So they originally started out producing their own organic fruits and vegetables for the family, and had surplus and didn't want to waste it, so came to the farmers market and were able to get involved with that initiative and, you know, sell those, you know, amazing fruits and vegetables to the customers. And it took off from there, and they've grown from strength to strength. They've increased their goats, which means the milk's increased, and now, you know, we're able to use that and create another product that, yeah, has had a lot of really good feedback.
Just one of the fabulous and delicious products that everybody can find at the farmers market. It starts tomorrow, the new season. 9 years, that's incredible.
9 years.
It's a long time, isn't it?
9 years.
I can't believe it's been going for 9 years. I'm going to get down there this weekend as well. But Sally, when you get down there, for those who have never been, what is it like? Give us a bit of a description.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's an oasis of green. You come out of the car park, generous car parking, I must say, right next to the market, because it's in this sort of lovely green tree lined area at the back of Bay Avenue, just by their skate park. And I can see all the stalls as I'm walking up with my reusable jute bags, of course. But as Carla describes, most of the farmers set out to feed their families. So they were producing organic vegetables as a lifestyle choice, something that they wanted so that they could give that goodness to their families, because they wanted to avoid pesticides. Conviction farmers. I think they all started out like that, from, you know, Mohammed from Abdullah from Modern Organic Farm. I think they opened about 20 years ago. But it was not a commercial decision to start with. And it's not the easy option here, especially. So, it started very small. I was at the very first market when it started. I don't think it was 9 years. It's been 9 seasons, because it was 2010, I think, was the very first one down in Souq al-Baha, just on the terrace. There was a handful of stalls. And now I think it's opening earlier this year because there's so many farms now who've come to the organic table. So there will be a limited amount of variety, because obviously tomatoes don't grow right now. There will be lots of green things, but they will be really freshly picked. And because there's at least 15 farms, that's why the market can be held earlier this year. So there's a reason that it's in October, not end of November.
The more farms, the easier it is to open it up earlier and get everybody involved. But like you said, you can go out there, obviously, as the season progresses and as more produce it becomes available, it will be different week to week.
Absolutely.
Which makes it exciting, and it makes it fun, and it's surprising, because you want to go there, you want to see what's in season. Riyad, how long have you been with the farmers market? How many seasons now?
I think we've done about four seasons. Yeah. I mean, it's... And it's been just kind of growing from strength to strength. It really has. It's, I mean, if I'm honest, the only kind of farmers market that I kind of visited was once when I was in New York. I mean, a long time ago. And this was only really the second one. And this is just an amazing farmers market. It's one of the best ones. And it's really kind of authentic to its roots in terms of what farmers market's all about. It's the real people that are kind of producers and who are working with cooperatives as well. And it's amazing. Everyone's got their own little specialist area. So, you know, we're exactly like, you know, Carla with her cheese. And, you know, then you've got all the other amazing kind of vegetables from the farmers in from Abu Dhabi, from Al Ain, from all over the place, from Dubai. You've got us with the honey, and so it's there's a really amazing feeling when you're there. It's there's so many people that from all over the place. It's a real kind of eclectic mix of kind of customer sort of demographic, and they get a chance to meet the farmers, you know, to talk about the produce. It's all kind of, nothing's kind of shipped in from anywhere all over the world. It's just kind of, and sometimes they pick it that very morning, you know, some of the vegetables, you know, and it's amazing.
I mean, you guys, we're going to talk more about the market in a moment, but as well as that, I'm going to ask each and every one of you what your favorite market is from around the world. Any special memories you've got about those food markets from anywhere? I know I've got mine. I'm going to be sharing those as well. This is Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8. Sampling some fresh and local fare at the markets today on the Thursday Bruncher. Welcoming here to the table, to the panel, we've got Sally Prosser, food and travel blogger at My Custard Pie, Riyadh Hamid, the one and only honey man from Balqis Honey. I've got to get that in every time. And new to the panel today, we've got Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. Can we just stop right there? Because Carla, you've only been here like 20 minutes and you've already had your first text. Just to say, I had some of Carla's goat's cheese ricotta the other week. It's delicious. So there you go. You've already got fans out there who are listening to the show as well. If you've never had her cheese, make sure you get down to the farmer's market tomorrow and try some out. But we're talking markets today, your favorite markets from around the world. Now, Sally, can I start with you and ask you, you travel a lot. You've seen some incredible places.
And actually, when we travel as a family, my husband's obsessed with markets. So I've been to loads this summer and two gorgeous ones in Edinburgh. But my very favourite is in Stroud in Gloucestershire. I'm from Cheltenham, but Stroud was always a little sort of slightly scruffy town out in the Cotswolds. And they started the first ever farmers market in England, and it's transformed the town, and it's fantastic. It's every Saturday morning. It's a real farmers market. So you do buy vegetables from people who've grown it. There's like a fruit cellar, and you never know what's going to be on that table. It's usually just one thing. So 1 week it's going to be plums because they're picking plums that week. Fantastic cheeses, charcuterie.
I love the element of surprise.
Oh, it's amazing.
When you've got, because it's, you know, from the producers and whatever is in season, it's like you just want to turn up to see what they've got on the table.
Totally. And a few food stalls selling, you know, things you can eat right then. Oh, really good donuts. Oh, my goodness. Really good donuts. Carly used to make donuts.
That should have been the first thing.
These are really good donuts. Fantastic. But they have a stall with like a sausage in a roll, which I go for, and then my vegan daughters go next door.
A sausage in a roll, like a sausage roll, or
no, a lovely fluffy bap, and then a grill, nice. You know, with the sausage, and then you pop it in and you eat it there with your mug of tea,
and nice and hot.
Yeah, my daughters have the vegan wrap from the next stall, you know, and there's a local milk producer, a lady who's got her own herd, and she calls them Jess's Ladies. So she sells her yogurt and milk there. It's just lovely. It's small. It brings the town alive. And I love it.
Oh, it sounds fab. Riyadh, tell us your favourite.
So I only ever kind of like I said before, went to one farmer's market. And that was kind of maybe about 15 years ago when I was in New York. And it was, I used to live there at one point for a few months. For all my sins, and I remember it was I just wanted something to do. I didn't know what I was going to do, and it was in the morning, and someone recommended I go to a farmer's market, and it was amazing. It was just it's just the atmosphere. I don't know what happens when it's like someone unveils, just kind of pulls the curtains, and you kind of go into this kind of kingdom of greenery and food and smells, and
it's magnificent.
Noises, it is, it really is, and you meet people, interesting people, and everyone's all loud and bubbly and just wanting to sell, and what I loved about it is the samples. You get samples from everything, so you're constantly just kind of just shoving things in your mouth and just getting full just from samples. You want want to try this, we want to try that. And so it's just it was a lovely feeling. Then coming, coming to Dubai, and we've got the farmers market here. It does remind me a little bit of that, but in a more kind of sober way. But I love the feeling that it gives you, you know. And it's something kind of magical about going in the morning and to a farmers market and looking at all this fresh produce and walking around and, you know, and everyone trying to sell their produce and telling you how fresh it is and what the history of the food is and the vegetables. And so it's something kind of, you know, magical. That's the only word I can think of.
And did you get the idea for your tasting of honey from that market? Because I was thinking, where can you taste at our farmers market? And one thing being shoved down your gob at the farmers market is the honey.
It is.
Your stall. Have a taste.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, our business is purely based on tasting. We give everybody samples. Everybody has to taste, you know, before they buy. And what we've done is, before we thought we'd only just try the market with like two or three bowls of different varieties of honey. But because our customers, want more and more varieties, more kind of flavors and flavor profiles. So we're bringing, I think, maybe six or eight bowls this year. Wow. Of different varieties of honeys. So it's really good. And what people do usually, the Baker and Spice have got these beautiful baker, you know, the breads there are just amazing. You know, they'll go and get a little bit of bread from there. Then they'll like pop over to Carla's. Carla's got the most amazing cheeses, and we're not kind of exaggerating, but she really does. There's some of the cream cheeses. Then they'll come back to us and put like honey all over it. And then they'll just start kind of eating it away. And it's just a delicious.
They're going, that's the thing. You just walk from one producer to the next. Yeah. And you collect the food. Yeah. Like you say, you go to Baker and Spice, get your bread. You go to Carla. You get your cheese, you go to Balqis, get the honey, put that on top.
Exactly.
And it's incredible.
It is.
It's just like, you know, it is that assault on the senses. Yeah. It's the sights, it's the sounds, it is the smell, the glorious, incredible smell of being at a market. Carla, tell us about your favourite.
So mine is the Marylebone Farmers Market every mm-hmm. Sunday, right behind La Fromagerie, the cheese shop that I used to work in. So we would all sneak off and go and fill our bags with amazing produce. There's a guy there selling tea in mugs, and you'd walk around with your mug of tea that you had to return.
because it always tastes better, doesn't it? Not
always.
In a mug
always
or in a glass.
Always.
Has to be.
Dirty little mug, but you didn't care. You would carry that round, drink it, it was hot, loads of sugar in it, buy all your veg, buy all your fruit, buy all your, you know, amazing stuff there. And it all came from the local surrounding areas, you know, just outside London. They'd bring it in. And it was, you know, great for us to sneak out for an hour. If Patricia's listening, I'm sorry. You did lose me for an hour every Sunday. I mean, everyone else. But yeah, it was a good atmosphere.
You
really great atmosphere.
It.
Yeah.
You just had
and that's
to get
what,
out there.
That's what's really good about it, mostly, is the atmosphere. Mm. See the same people, same farmers and their kids come along. And, you know, you see their family, you see what family grew or produced, you know, whatever you buy. So there's a massive connect.
We would love to hear from you. Tell us what your favourite markets are. Maybe it's something exotic. Maybe it's something quirky and interesting. Maybe it's something from your own hometown, 4001 or on the Dubai Eye app. And give us a call, 04423 1010 as well. We've got some messages already coming in. We'll talk about that in just a sec and talk food news. But before we do all of that, we do need to give away our first clue to our mystery ingredient. So,
guess the ingredient.
And the first clue is,
so the name of today's mystery ingredient is a member of the plant family. Right, I've got to say this, it's in Latin. Cucurbitacea, which comes from Central and South America, where Christopher Columbus brought seeds to the Mediterranean region and Africa. However, the varieties of today's mystery ingredient were developed in northern Italy in the second half of the 19th century. The name of today's mystery ingredient comes from the Indian scooter squash, meaning green thing eaten green. I do apologise if I pronounce scooter squash incorrectly. That's the first clue.
That's your first clue. My name is Sally Musa. This is the Thursday brunch on Dubai Eye 103.8. Coming back to the Thursday brunch today. We are talking some of the world's best food markets, the best markets in general. We got one text in earlier saying, Umundi Market in Queensland in Australia. Please do text back and let us know why that is so fabulous and why we should all be visiting. Another one from Shahana saying, my favourite market that I have visited is the Jemaa el Fna in Morocco. It's just magical, beautiful, and they sell the most delicious fresh orange juice in the square, which is the best orange juice I've ever had. And it's dirt cheap. In the evenings, you can settle into one of the restaurants, eat some delicious food, followed by Moroccan tea. Is there anything better than Moroccan mint tea? Love a bit of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yum. Now we are going to be getting some food news.
The latest food news.
Now, Riad, I'm going to start with you because it is a very important week in the news of food.
Absolutely. It's a catastrophic event in terms of news, this is. So basically, it comes from The Independent, and it's basically Morrison's, the supermarket chain in the UK, launches the UK's hottest supermarket curry, because it's curry week, isn't it? And basically, the supermarket chain twist on the beloved Indian dish is so spicy that it even comes with a safety warning. So it's called the Volcanic Vindaloo. Can you imagine how spicy that is?
Oh my gosh.
And not only that, but it's only for £1.50. I mean, how mad is that? £1.50 for a crazy spicy hotel.
That's nothing.
Which is nothing, is it? So it's so cheap, and they're using some of the most amazing hottest chilies on in the world, and they're using the chili called no less the Naga Viper.
Ooh. Even the name makes me scared.
I'm kind of shivering right now, Sally. And the thing about it is, it's got a rating of 1,382,118 on the Scoville scale, which is 200 times hotter than the usual jalapeno.
Wow. 200 times hotter.
200 times. Can you believe that? Wow. So curry fans have been telling us that they don't get the fiery heat that they want from the ordinary ready sort of meal curries. It's just so hot that it's going to kind of literally burn your head off.
Would you try it, Riyadh?
Absolutely would, yeah. I would, you know, because I like challenges, you know what I mean? And it's like National Curry Week, and, you know, I wouldn't give it any of my kids. No. Actually, maybe I'd give it to our Ali, because he's 11 years old and he's a bit naughty. So I probably, if he's done anything wrong, I might put a tablespoon of that in his gob.
Oh, God, a tablespoon. Yeah. That would kill you. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
You'd have to have a lot of writer on the side for that, wouldn't you?
But I mean, you know, the thing is, when it's that hot, do you actually taste anything else? When I eat something that hot, your mouth is on fire, your head's on fire, isn't it?
It actually paralyzes your tongue. You can't sense or taste or identify anything else after you've had something so kind of like crazy hot. It just it's paralysis. I don't know. I mean, I've had it once where I went to a very close friend of mine who was Algerian when I was in the UK, and they made this beautiful couscous and this traditional kind of, you know, like a tagine and couscous, and it was beautiful. But the thing is, they only put I forgot what it's called, you know, those little kind of chilies, those kind of fat, from Jamaica, they look kind of a Jamaican.
Scotch bonnet.
Bonnet. Anyway, so I was kind of eating it, and all of a sudden I kind of bit into it, and I'm chewing away, and I just kind of swallowed it, and then I didn't know what happened to me. I swear to God, I nearly stopped breathing. I was gasping for air. My face went different colour. Blotches starting to happen, and they didn't know what's going on with him, what's happening. Oh, and then the woman realised, you know, his wife, that I had the chili, and she went and got like a gallon of milk and yogurt, and all I was doing was just like that. And then all of it, I was kind of slowly just coming back to life. I was coming back to life from this attack, and I'm thinking, never again am I coming to their house again. Never.
Not touching the food. Yeah. But that's a good tip, that it's yogurt.
Yeah.
Yogurt does the trick. Yeah. Milk does the trick. It's not water. You can't just drink water.
No.
Or sweet things. So actually, a spoonful of honey.
Really?
Yeah, I definitely.
I didn't know that.
Sugar also
pineapple helps. I find that pineapple helps, and cucumber, because I remember one time I had some kung pao chicken at a Malaysian restaurant, and it just was it blew my head off too, and they were like, just have some of the cucumber and the pineapple. But there you go. Yeah, so National Curry Week.
Absolutely.
Very important milestone on the culinary calendar.
Volcanic Vindaloo.
There you go.
So do you want to know what the... Can you guess what the top three curry favourite curries in the UK are? Can you guess, though? Go on, what's your guess?
Chicken.
What's
number one? Chicken. Butter chicken. Is that up there?
Not number one.
Jalfrezi.
That's number three.
Korma.
Korma's number two. Come on. No, that's quite... That's number five. What's number one? Come on, you can get it.
Vindaloo.
Is it Vindaloo?
I can't guess. Go.
Tikka masala.
Oh, tikka masala.
Well, of course it is. Why didn't we say tikka masala?
Blinking hell.
I should have. Well, you know what? It's time to try all of the different curries in celebration of National Curry Week in the UK, but you can celebrate here too. Why not? It is time to give the next clue in our Guess the Ingredient competition.
Guess the ingredient.
Now, Riyadh, it is your turn to read the next clue.
Okay, so today's mystery ingredient can reach nearly a metre in length, but it's usually harvested immature at 15 to 25 centimetres. In Britain and Ireland, when today's mystery ingredient is fully grown, it's referred to as amarrow. Amarrow, all right. So while it's easy to grow, today's mystery ingredient requires plentiful bees for pollination. And in areas of pollinator decline or high pesticide use, gardeners often experience fruit failure. It's going on and on this, blinking hell. Where the fruit begins to grow, then dries or rots due to an insufficient number of pollen grains delivered to the female flower. It can be corrected by hand pollination or by decreasing the bee population.
Increasing.
Oh, Jo, you wrote these clues.
How long is that?
She has no mercy, Jo. Honestly, Jo, really.
Keep you on your toes. Come on.
And coming up next, look, instant stock cubes, we all use them, but is it okay for a Michelin-starred chef to be using them? We'll tell you next on the Thursday Brunch.
The Thursday Brunch on Dubai Today with Sally Moussa on Dubai I 103.8.
We are tasting some food off air, I'm not going to lie. We are enjoying a lot of deliciousness here in the studio. We've got with us Riyadh Hamid. He is the honey man from Belkis Honey. He is drizzling that on top of some incredible courgette loaf that Sally Prosser has brought in of mycustardbuy.com. But we didn't consume that without putting some gorgeous goat's cheese on top from Carla Thetford. She is an artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. And all of these fabulous people are going to be at the farmers market this weekend. We're going to get to how fantastic that tastes in just a minute. But we're going to keep going with the food news. Talking about stock cubes. Now, I'm going to go around the table. Do you guys use instant stock cubes in your cooking? Go on, Riyadh.
I do, but I don't use I do get it from the organic shop because I think their variety is really kind of more vegetable-y and more kind of, it tastes like a real stock. So, but I don't use the kind of like the cheapy weepy one that you just get on any little supermarket.
Sally?
Yeah, I'm the same. I only use the, I think it's marigold vegetarian stock powder.
That's the one.
Occasionally.
You go for the proper stuff.
But for meat, I make my own stock if I'm going to... and actually, Spinneys do one in a pouch now that's fresh that you can buy, and that's not bad. But then... you know, it's not organic, so...
Well, what would you say if I told you that a Michelin star chef uses instant stock cubes? Top... yes. Top chef in stock shock, yes. We all gasped in the studio when we talked about it off air. But this is Tom Carriage. He's admitted that he uses stock cubes at home. That raised a few well-manicured eyebrows at the Cheltenham Literary Festival last weekend when he admitted this. And the accepted wisdom being that any cook worth their Maldon sea salt has a freezer full of neatly labelled, lovingly homemade stuff. Indeed, probably implied that in this he would do this in the past himself. That's a big fat lie. He says most bones in my house go to the dog in one form or another. And with the freezer space at a premium, you'd want ice cream in there instead of the stock. But this is the thing. I mean, not all stock is created equal, but you would expect a Michelin star chef to be making his own stock, would you not, Carla?
I would. I most definitely would.
I quite like his honesty, though, just, don't you?
Is it a cop-out to use
cubes? Yeah, I think it is. Mm-hmm. If you went in and you saw him just chucking an OXO cube in your soup and you're paying, you know.
Well, I think he's saying no he only uses it at home, though. If he was using it in the restaurant, no.
No, it would be at home.
But if he's cooking at home.
Oh, you can do what you likes at home.
Is life too short, though, to just be boiling stock over the weekend?
Yes.
Why does he bring it home from his own restaurant,
exactly.
though? I don't get that.
I think it's shocking, to be honest with you. I think it's really kind of shocking. And and if you're doing it at home, you might have that practice. Let's just try it in the kitchen at work. I don't know. You might just get that little demon's kind of whispering him, let's just get some OXO in there instead of boiling it and doing it and preparing all the broth. It's going to take 7 hours. Just get an OXO cube in there.
But everyone's got their guilty kitchen cooking secret, haven't they?
Life is too short.
Do you have your shortcuts that you think, it doesn't matter, I can just do it this way or that way?
He should use marigold, the ones that I use. Then, says Sally, if he's going to use, a kind of any stock or like a little cube, he should use a good quality one. Then, you know what I mean. But it's a bit shocking when you think. I don't know. Maybe we've got a lot of perceptions about Michelin star chefs in our minds about in terms of where they are, in terms of the dizzy heights of how the media has created these chefs and what they'd be eating and taking it back home with them and what they're doing. But in reality, they're probably eating just kind of beans on toast when they get home.
Totally.
It doesn't surprise me that he's
fish finger sandwich.
Life's
too short not to have one. Yeah, now and again.
Another something controversial has happened in Australia. Okay, Vegemite. Who knows Vegemite?
Oh. Marmite.
Yeah. Marmite. I know. I'm in a room full of Brits.
Marmite.
What can I do? So, Australia's beloved Vegemite. I don't love Vegemite, but. It is out there. It is like a national condiment. We have to have Marmite on everything, from toast to whatever. Now, Vegemite has released a new blend. It's called Blend 17. Blend 17. It comes like in special packaging, in this gorgeous black packaging. Joe, you saw this, and I looked at it as actually a lot of Australians looked at it and went, that is just wrong. It's like the black label Vegemite, and it's just like all, I don't know, upper classy and whatever. But it's like Vegemite.
Well, that says it all. Classy. It was classy. A classy jar of Vegemite.
But that's the point, that Vegemite is like this humble food. It's the great Australian equaliser. So to see it in that fancy schmancy packaging, I was just like, that's just wrong. But you loved it.
I would. I was actually asking you, right, who's going to Australia and who can buy me one? It's black with a black label and a gold sort of silver lid, and it's just very cool.
So Vegemite
with bling. That's exactly what it is. So this has caused a lot of controversy on Twitter, on the internet. Some people saying, you know, this just doesn't work. And even the taste. Some people tasted it and said, actually, it doesn't taste that different. One person who loves their Vegemite has been, says, eaten. This person, Anthony Angus, he's eaten Vegemite for 32 years, says, I purchased it out of curiosity. I eat a lot of Vegemite, so I figured, why not try the new flavour? But actually, he said, it's a bit more salty. That's about it. There isn't a lot of difference. So it feels like a lot of marketing for no reason. Does that disappoint you?
I'll have it if it's a bit more salty. With salted butter on white bread.
Salted butter. Salted on toast. Butter, yeah.
Yes. Well, if you are a diehard Vegemite fan or Marmite fan, would you go for this? We are discussing food stories. We're eating lots of delicious food. We're going to go through some of that amazing food in just a minute. In the studio with us, we've got Sally Prosser, food and travel blogger at mycustardpie.com, Riyad Hamid of Balqis Honey, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. Lots more to taste, lots more to eat and enjoy on the Thursday brunch with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8. Yes, hello and good afternoon to the second hour of the Thursday brunch. We are looking at the world's best markets today. In studio with us, talking great markets and talking all the best produce that we're going to be seeing this weekend at the ninth season. of the Farmers Market on the Terrace are Riyad Hamid. He is the honey man behind Balkis Honey. Carla Thetford, who is an artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. And Sally Prosser, food and travel blogger at mycustardpie.com. Carla, I am going to come to you now. We are going to start exploring your cheese. So where do we start when we're looking at your beautiful artisan goat's cheese?
So we have really fresh, young curd, really simple, tiny bit of salt, really versatile, make it sweet, cheesecake, savoury, ravioli fillings. And you've also got a really fresh young curd with pink peppercorns, no salt, really simple. Put it on toast on top of your salad, fresh and young, and just to be eaten straight away. The same as our ricotta. So we make goat's milk ricotta, and that as well, 5 days, but simply with honey. You really don't need to do anything else to it. It's fantastic. We have ashed goat's cheese, so it's rolled in ash. And that will just alkalize the cheese and make certain molds grow on top. And that's what gives it quite a punchy flavor.
We've had a text in from John saying, what an inspiring story from Carla earlier on. He said her ashed goat's cheese rocks. So there you go.
It's so well received. Yeah.
So, I mean, is that one of your most popular cheeses that you sell?
It is.
Why do you think it's so popular?
I think because it's covered in ash and it has a penicillin candida mold that grows over the top, which is white. And a geotrichum mold in there, which makes it slightly wrinkly, the rind. And people are really intrigued as to, you know, what is it? How do you get it like that? What does it taste like? So that's our most popular. And we have a similar one that just has the penicillin candidum in it. So it's white and it's just a bloomy rind. Mm. And it's very mushroomy. A little bit sweeter. It's not as punchy.
It is punchy. Very earthy. I love that strong flavour that it's got. It's gorgeous. Riyad, your opinions on the cheese?
Be kind, huh?
God, honestly.
Be kind.
I'm pretty sure it's the opposite. He can't get enough of it.
Exactly. Just be honest. I mean, it's just beautiful. I mean, it's you're going from so many different flavour profiles, you know, kind of, you've got the saltiness, you know, you've that kind of crazy creaminess, and you're kind of navigating your sort of taste palette through so many different kind of this myriad of you know, flavors. It's just beautiful. I mean, the cream cheese is just, I call it a cream cheese, but it's just beautiful. It's fluffy. It's, you know, it's like clouds. You know, you're just kind of having, spreading it on
with your honey. Yeah.
it really is,
I mean, and I'm not just saying it because I'm, you know, the honey man, but my honey on her cheese is unbelievable. I think cheese is one of these kind of you know, food products that if you kind of want to take it to another level in terms of flavor, add things to it, you can play around, whether it's fruit or whether it's kind of a compote, whether it's honey. So it just lends itself to things to be around it to kind of just pimp up the taste, you know what I mean? And it's delicious, it's beautiful. And I mean, she's honestly one of the best, you know, cheesemakers that I know. And I'm not just saying because it's Carla. I've known her for a while. But she's actually a beekeeper, Carla, as well, which many people didn't know.
Yeah.
How are you? Tell us about that, beekeeping.
Yeah, so I used to keep bees. I was really intrigued. I was really, when I was younger, obsessed with tessellating shapes. And I would...
The honeycomb shape.
Yeah, the honeycomb shape. And the hexagon was the one that I could, you know, tessellate. And I, you know...
It just got you interested in bees.
Yeah, it did. And I went and did a school visit when I was really young. And I just knew that I would keep bees one day. And because it lent so well to honey, I dived in when I lived in Essex. Went living in Essex for a little bit and found myself with quite a lot of space in the garden. And had a couple of hives, helped the guy up on the golf course with his hives, and learn how to keep bees.
Didn't you drive through Central London with a hive in the back?
I did. I went and picked some up, and you have to drive them back. So I put my bee suit on, and you have to drive back with it in your car. And they escape. You know, they get everywhere.
They get everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And driving through Central London with a car full of bees.
Yeah. With a swarm.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, with a it's pretty hairy, to say the least. And when they sting you, it is extremely painful.
Yeah, it is painful.
But they gave me a lot of beautiful honey. And I learned about honey.
Which makes you, you know how to pair it perfectly and with the right honey.
And then I met Riyad a couple of years ago, and I was like, this is brilliant, you know?
You could help him out with his...
I've already offered her a job, but she didn't want to know.
Oh, I did. Come on.
You left me and went into cheese instead.
it's the honey or the cheese, and I've kind of done the honey. I need to branch out.
Sally, your opinions on the cheese.
I would like to point out, there's a lot of goat's cheese haters out there, including my husband. Oh no, not goat's cheese, because they think it tastes goaty, doesn't it? There's some strong, really, quite polarizing and quite chalky goat cheeses. This isn't like that.
Oh, it's creamy it's creamy.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Fluffy.
So soft. It's like a cloud. It's eating a cloud. It's beautiful.
Like, you get different varieties of cow's milk cheeses, so many. I think we've in the supermarkets you just get mono, about two types, don't you? So that's why it's good to taste Carla's, and I do like that goat's paired with the honey on and on my courgette loaf.
And it's made here, and she makes it here, you know, which is amazing. It's a local product.
It's fantastic.
It's a phenomenal product.
Yeah, but how many varieties of cheese do you make, Carla? Got to think about it.
Eight now. Yeah.
Are you planning on releasing more, creating more?
Do you know what? No, I'm just going to perfect them, because I think anyone that came last year to the farmers market, thank you so much. They supported what cheese I was making then. And I think this year they'll get back and they'll see they've all evolved and, you know, they've all got better.
We've got a message from Tayo asking, he's got a question saying, hi, please can the cheesemaker Carla comment on whether the cheese is halal? How do you know?
They are. They're all halal. A lot of the time people ask about the rennet being halal, and it is. There's different types of rennet you can get, and traditionally you use an animal rennet, but you can also get vegetarian rennets, and mine is a microbial rennet, which is halal. It's kosher. It's a really great rennet to use for cheese making, and it's a stronger strength than the animal rennet, so you don't use as much, and you're talking 0.1 milliliter for every 10 liters. Tiny amount, but it's kosher, it's halal, it's vegetarian,
it's beautiful,
and that's why I chose it, so as many people could enjoy the cheese as possible.
Yeah, particularly obviously when you're selling here in Dubai, it needs to be halal anyway.
Yep.
So that's that will put your mind at ease as well. But you've got some recipes for us, Carla, as well.
Yes.
We've got spinach and ricotta ravioli, grilled ash goat's cheese on a baguette. Oh my goodness, roasted beetroot, crumpled goat's cheese with pink peppercorn. Take us through the first one, though. Spinach and ricotta ravioli.
So really easy. Wilt your spinach, ricotta, or even the goat's curd. Brilliant. Tiny bit of garlic if you like, parmesan maybe. And that's your filling. And then you can either fill tubes with that and make cannelloni, or fresh pasta sheets and ravioli.
Oh, delicious. It's
really
simple.
Really simple.
And just perfection. And that is the thing about this, because it's all fresh produce. It is handmade. It is, all of that. You've got the flavor. The flavor is better. The flavor is stronger. You don't need to do too much to it.
No. And it's, like the ricotta just with honey. It's two different. It's two different
contrasting
ingredients.
Flavors. Yep. Yeah.
They look beautiful together, taste beautiful. So the less you do, for me, to food, the better. Mm-hmm. Like, the simpler it is, the more you kind of give respect to that ingredient. The more you get out of it, for me.
Absolutely. We're loving it. We're going to be tasting more delicious food in a few moments. But we've got to give now two clues for the mystery ingredient.
Guess the ingredient.
So, Sally, you've got those two clues for us.
Today's mystery ingredient has many health benefits and contains good amount amounts of potassium, which can help control your blood pressure because it lessens the harmful effects of salt on your body. Today's mystery ingredient is also high in vitamin C.
And that's it?
Yeah. You want the next one?
Yes.
Today's mystery ingredient is ultra low in calories, which makes it the perfect light side dish for a big meal. One cup of today's mystery ingredient has about 19 calories, and it's best consumed raw and is known to increase metabolism, which helps us burn fat.
There you go. Two clues in one, a double whammy for you. I'm loving the messages coming in from you, Matt, about the Vegemite. And also Mark is asking a question. Sounds yummy about the goat's cheese. How long does it take to make a goat's cheese from scratch? We're going to find out next. This is the Thursday Brunch with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8. Courgette loaf, goat's cheese, and a fabulous variety of honeys. I've just had some from Socotra in Yemen. Incredible stuff. We'll talk about that in just a second. With us today, we've got Sally Prosser, food and travel blogger at mycustardpie.com, Riyad Hamid of Balqis Honey, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. And a great question came in for you, Carla, about how long it takes to make goat's cheese from scratch. We will get you to answer that question in just a sec, but I want to address the Vegemite drama that we had going on just before we came into the second hour. Matt, I love your messages. You've just reminded me that the new packaging fad won't last, you say. They've tried the new things with Vegemite before and have failed miserably. There was Cheesy Mite. Yes, what a disaster. And Vegemite 2.0. Does anybody remember that? Vegemite 2.0 came out, and that was an absolute disaster as well. Failed miserably. No one took it on. So it will be interesting to see if this new packaging takes off. Carla, coming back to you and your beautiful, gorgeous goat's cheese. We've gone from the ash goat's cheese, the young curd of the creamy goat's cheese. So there's an amazing variety there. Lots of different flavors, lots of different textures. But a great question here from Mark asking, how long does it take to make goat's cheese from scratch?
It can take 2 days and it can take a year.
What's the difference?
Hard cheeses, they're going to be, they may take 2 or 3 days to make them. Then they're going to be aged for about a year, 12 months. The goat's curd, pink peppercorns, 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
No age to them at all.
The ash cheese.
The ash, about 6 weeks.
Okay. So yeah. Obviously a whole different variety there. But we were talking off air about, you know, obviously you're getting an incredible number of messages talking about how great your goat's cheese is. Gwen is asking, where can we buy Carla's cheeses? You can buy them at the farmer's market starting tomorrow on the terrace at Bay Avenue Business Bay. But it's a difficult thing because you might have a lot of demand, people loving your cheeses, but you can actually only produce so much.
There's only so much goat's milk, and goat's milk is seasonal, so at the moment it's been extremely hot, so those goats are using all their energy to keep cool, so they're not producing milk. We have a small amount, and that will lift through the rest of the year, but right now, you know, we don't have a lot, so we don't make a lot of cheese. So there will become a time where, you know, you don't have any and you wait until the season starts again, or you wait until the animals are kidding again and milk is there. So you have to work with the seasons. You have to make sure your animals are, you know, happy. Otherwise, they won't produce milk.
And you do feel bad when people come to you and say, oh, but I came down especially for your cheese.
I do. And I really genuinely, I'm really sorry when we sell out. And we sell out pretty early. And when people come afterwards and say, what do you have? I came specially for it. I am genuinely so apologetic because I know they've traveled there just to get it. And we do bring more and more to the market because I hate disappointing people. I really do. But yeah, you know, when it's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And then we're waiting for the next batch.
So get down there early, really, tomorrow to get that beautiful goat's cheese. 8 a.m. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's when the market starts. But more amazing food we have on the table, Sally. We've got your courgette cake or courgette loaf.
Well, I like to call it a loaf because it's not that sweet. And it's like cake, but you could have it for breakfast. there's lots of healthy loaf recipes out there, but I looked at quite a few of them. They've got a lot of sugar content. This one doesn't. Courgettes are one of the things at the farmer's market that's there pretty much all season. So I'm always looking at new ways to use them. So this one, I use some spelt flour and some normal flour. One egg, free range, of course, courgettes. I sweetened it with honey and some natural yogurt and stirred some pistachios into it. And then I put a lemon and honey drizzle on the top. Now, why? So I baked with raw honey, which actually, if you bake with raw honey, it does start to break down all the goodness in it. You know, yeah. Heat destroys it.
Of course.
You still have some of it, so it's better than just refined sugar. But you use half the amount that you would from just normal sugar, because it's got a much more intense sweet taste.
Which makes it better for you.
So it's better for you, so you've got less sweetener. And then I did the drizzle, which is fresh lemon juice with some raw honey in afterwards, because then you get the benefits of the raw honey when you drizzle over the top, and then you get that sharpness from the lemon. So when it's come out of the oven, you just pour it over. It's really easy recipe, and it will be on my blog hopefully tonight. My computer's gone in to be mended, but hopefully tonight, definitely, you know, sometime tomorrow, and the recipe's on there. But it's just, you mix together the liquid ingredients.
We're going to get that recipe from you and put it on the Dubai Today blog as well, and people can find it there for sure. But it sounds, it sounds great, but it tastes divine.
Oh,
it
thank you.
Really something. But, you know, it's not something that you think about, courgette in a cake or a loaf. You know, it's kind of unusual.
If you look on the internet, there's loads of variations, I must say. It keeps it moist, though. And you get, a lot of people like to hide veg from their children by the look of it as well. So you can put it into muffins and things, and the kids can see something green in there, maybe, if you put it on a box grater. But they'll eat it because it's called cake. You can even put chocolate with it. You can make a chocolate courgette loaf.
But I can tell you right now, with goat's cheese and some honey, wow. It really is.
It was a good combination, wasn't it?
And you know,
with the pistachios
We're talking about great produce, great, beautiful, fresh foods that you can find at your farmer's market. But it's something that we were realizing today. When you've got this great produce, you actually don't need a lot of it.
No.
And it fills you up, and it really is something to savor. We're talking the world's best markets, what you can get there. And we'll be back with more on the Thursday Brunch with me, Sally Moosa, on Dubai i 103.8. you need to guess what our mystery ingredient is.
Guess the ingredient.
Right, Sally, you've got our next clue.
So you can eat the blossoms of today's mystery ingredient, and sometimes you can find these at the farmer's market.
Just a little ad.
And even though it's served as a vegetable, it's technically a fruit, because it comes from a flower and grows from a golden blossom that blooms under the leaves. Shops don't always sell the blooms, but you should be able to find them at the farmer's market. The flowers aren't just for looking at. You can eat them. And the most popular way to prepare them is fried or stuffed.
Okay, so if you know what it is, 4001 or on the Dubai I app. It is not spinach alia. It is not strawberries shaza. I want people to win this, so I'm giving you a little bit of a clue of what it isn't. It's not celery. It's not goji berries. So keep trying. Send in your guesses now. But we need to move on now to the honey that we've been drizzling all over our food today. Riyadh,
it's all about the honey, love.
Help us out here, because this is just something else.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about it is that I'm similar to how, you know, Carla's passion in terms of kind of keeping it real and organic and everything else. We just want to deal with raw honey, which we always make a big deal out of, that it retains all the minerals and minerals and elements and vitamins and all the kind of amazing stuff that's in it. And so we make a big deal out there at the fact that it's raw, because we don't do anything to it. We don't kind of adulterate it. We don't heat it. We don't pasteurize it. There's no process involved whatsoever. There's no super filtration. So the only thing is, it's kind of filtered gently, just in order to remove the kind of bees heads and bees legs and stuff, because you know that's what happens when you're dealing with kind of like honeycomb. You get little trapped bees in there, and the heads are all over the place, and the legs are flying everywhere. And so you know,
oh,
it's just,
what an image you've created.
Yeah, no, no, sorry about that. And the thing about it is that so it's just that slow filtration, and it doesn't take away all the other sort of the sort of traceable bee products that are really in the honey, which is like the pollen, the royal jelly, you know, some of the propolis. All these are just amazing antibacterial kind of antifungal properties that give the honey that kind of boost of vitamins that give strengthen your immunity. So it's all about that raw amazing stuff, and we get it from all different parts of Yemen. You know, you had one earlier which you kind of commented on, which is the Socotra honey.
Yes, it just because it's like it's really dark, it's almost like the molasses, the date molasses.
Exactly.
It's that color. It is so dark, which we call dibis.
Dibis, yeah.
But it just, you know, you taste it, and I literally had just a tiny bit on the tip of my finger, and I put it in my mouth, and yes, it's a rich flavor, but then it just kind of goes whoosh in your mouth.
It does.
And it just, wow, it's an explosion of our aftertaste, really.
It is. You know, it's got that kind of little treacle sort of elements, and what it is that because Socotra is just an amazing island in Yemen, it's there is so much fauna and flora there that is not found anywhere else in the world. It's actually kind of, it's recognized as a part of a conservation area that with this kind of amazing different fauna and flora. So, you know, you've got these kind of blood dragon trees, which are really kind of unusual, that look like they've just come from some sci-fi kind of movie. You've got this kind of bulbous kind of trunk with kind of little kind of branches just kind of going on the top, and they look really like a Roald Dahl kind of sort of image on you know, in from a book. And the thing about it is that all that different kind of nectar and floral nectar from all of the different flowers and trees and stuff is all comes in that flavor of the honey. The bees forage from all the different varieties of nectars from all the flowers, and it all comes in there, and you can taste so many different flavor profiles, and some of them that will remind you of certain things, you know, whether it's kind of like a burnt sugar, whether it's treacle, whether it's kind of you know, anything. I mean, a creaminess, whether it's and it's all kind of, everybody has their own palette that they can interpret and kind of bring out when they try that honey. So yeah, it's all raw and it's all lovely and it's amazing.
How many different varieties have we got now?
So we've got about 20 different varieties, and we create fusions as well. So, you know, we have different varieties of fusions. We get some beautiful pure honeys that are just from all over the world. We're kind of expanding the variety now because our customers are demanding it. So we're doing it from Yemen. We also have some from, you know, from Kyrgyzstan. We have something from New Zealand, and we work with cooperatives, with families direct. So we don't kind of go on the open market and just buy anything. We want to guarantee the quality of the product. So it's New Zealand, Australia. We just got some amazing Australian honey, actually, which is lovely, from Perth, around Perth area. We have so many different countries right now. We're buying from. We've got some from the Andes Mountain in Chile, from around that area, which I'm going to go and visit there quite soon. I think Sally's going to come with me as well.
That would be amazing.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of the process, isn't it, for you to go and discover these places.
Absolutely.
And the flora where all of this comes from.
Exactly.
And it's just, that must be an incredible experience. What's been the most unusual, most surprising place that you've been to for your honey?
You know, I remember going into the rainforests of Malaysia once, and they were harvesting this most unbelievable kind of, it's a really yellow honey. So yellow, I've never seen it as yellow as this. And I had all this kind of in my mind what it was going to taste like, you know, tropical kind of, you know, kind of bits of pineapple and bits of this, because I always imagine things before. I'm very kind of imaginative. I look something like that and think of all these things, what it tastes like.
Because you do, when you see food, you kind of, you get this idea in your head of what it
could be. Exactly, eat with your eyes. But it was nothing like it when I tried it. I mean, and because I'm really kind of good at tasting and trying to get the core of what the flavor is, and I couldn't think of any other flavor apart from, imagine kind of you go walking past like a dumping site and there's a burnt tire and you get a waft of that burnt tire smoke that comes into your mouth. It tasted like a burnt tire.
Whoa.
You know, and I couldn't think of any other flavor profile. So I'm like, what is this? What's going on here? Are they foraging on burnt tires? What? It was just unbelievable, the different varieties of flavors, and it sometimes it just hits you that you don't know where these flavors are going to come from, and you think, how what is it? And it's just this culmination of so many different varieties of nectars, because of there's so many different varieties of fauna and flora, that once the bees are kind of foraging from all these different combination of nectars, flavors just kind of go wacky. They go really wacky. That's the only thing I can think of. And then that's where it hits you when you try it.
It's incredible to hear you say that. I'd be amazed to taste that kind of honey. But, you know, something that you you do a lot in your business is tell people how to combine honeys in different ways with other different foods. Today, with the courgette loaf, with the goat's cheese, it's just perfection, isn't it? What are the kind of honeys that go with this kind of thing?
Well, you know, the thing about it is that every time I kind of try a dish or some food or whatever, there's always this kind of niggling thing at the back of my mind. What will it taste like with my honey? What if I put some cider in there? What would if I put a little bit of sagotra or wild
flower? The orange honey on top of that combination with the courgette loaf and the goat's cheese is really beautiful.
It is delicious. What it is that with the... we had one of the hotels, one of the big hotels here. It's just... I think it's opened or not. The Bulgari Hotel, they wanted us to create like a fusion for them, which is a kind of citrusy variety. They wanted kind of orange tone, so I kind of did it with orange in the beginning, and I tried it with a wildflower and with a cider, and so it wasn't happening. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go with mandarin, I'm going to try with clementine, and I'm going to try with orange as well. So I tried all the zests and kind of put it all together and slowly just let it marinate for 2 days, and then went back and visited it a little bit again. And because you've got to get to know the personalities of the honey. Every honey has a different personality, and some things it will reject, some varieties of spices or things that you want to put in it, and some it will just absolutely embrace and love and just cuddle up with it, and they start kind of coming up with all these beautiful different flavors. So I just kind of keep dipping in, adding a little bit here and there until we've got it right in terms of the flavor profile, and then we just kind of run with it, and we just literally launch it, and we get either an amazing, astounding sort of reception, or it's a bit of a slow moving.
You've got it right. I'll just tell you, you've got it right. Riyadh, you've got lots of fans that love to hear Riyadh's accent all day. We'll visit the market and try to meet the man. Oh no, but wait, there's other messages that came in. I always want some honey every time I hear the honey man's gorgeous voice being so passionate about honey.
That's so sweet of
him. We are going to utilize that voice further to give us the last clue of the mystery ingredient.
Guess the ingredient.
So.
Okay, so you can eat today's mystery ingredient as zoodles, a low-carb substitute for noodles, and they are easy to make with help of some kitchen gadgets. You can also enjoy today's mystery ingredient in soup or gratin, stuffed, baked as healthy fries, or as a part of Sally Pross's cake.
Ah, that's a big clue, isn't it? Big clue right there. Jess, it's not a banana. This is Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8. We've got with us today Sally Prosser, food and travel blogger at My Custard Pie, Riyadh Hamid, the honey man from Belkis Honey, and Carla Thetford, artisan cheesemaker from Dina Farms. Now, Carla, it's a tradition here on the Thursday brunch that whoever comes in, particularly anybody who's new, gets asked about their food fantasy. Okay. So let's just get this going.
Food fantasy.
Tell us your food fantasy. What do you dream about?
I dream about being able to get my hands on a really good meat and potato pie, particularly from Wigan in the UK, because they have, I think, the highest percentage of pie shops anywhere in the UK. And they're fantastic.
You're going to have to explain this to me because I'm Australian, okay? So we just have meat pies. They don't have potato. Unless it's like a shepherd's pie or a cottage pie, you've got the potato on top. But that's not what you're talking about,
no,
is it?
No, it isn't.
Explain it.
Do you know what? If you're from that part of England, there is a real culture of just a meat and potato pie. You don't particularly know what meat's in it, but the pastry's amazing. You can put a nice bit of brown sauce on it. And literally, children, babies, you know, the older generation, everybody eats, or everybody will walk down the street eating a meat and potato pie.
What's so good about it?
And do you know what? It's the pastry, the ratio of the meat to the potato. They're always hot. And you just can't get them anywhere else. You can't make it posh. You can't try and reproduce it anywhere else and make it fancy so you can have them at home. You have to get out into the street, get to your pie shop, and it's a guilty pleasure.
Okay, I'm going to have to try one of these pies, I think. Riyadh, is this a favourite?
Riyadh knows all about these pies, I'm quite sure.
Well, I ate all the pies. Well, I do know what she's on about, and there's a halal version of it, which I do know where the source of the meat comes from. Thank you very much, Carla. And she's absolutely right. They're just beautiful. I mean, it's this thick pastry with kind of all... It's almost kind of compressed, this meat and potatoes all together with, again, and you kind of bite into it and it's just delicious. It's that meat and potato ratio when it's all kind of together. It's just so carby. It fills you up like you've just eaten a whole cow, you know, at the end of it. And you think, God, what have I done to myself after you've gobbled it all up? And I love it with brown sauce, HP brown sauce. Oh, gosh.
So, you see, I'm from the Southwest.
You're posh.
No. But I've got to put a vote in for the Cornish pasty here because it's the same. It's meat,
always
potato.
Always someone comes with a Cornish pasty story, don't they?
And a bit of swede and in beautiful pastry and with a bit of brown sauce.
Yeah.
They're not feeling like a proper meat and potato pie.
No, don't look convinced, Carla. Carla doesn't look convinced.
No, they're not as guilty as a meat and potato.
That's
Cornish
true.
Pasty is almost good for you.
Yeah.
And I think a meat and potato pie is
It's a proper like artery clogger. We want something that blocks it, all the arteries together, where you're literally hanging after you've eaten. Just kind of like waddling over to whatever you're gonna do after you've eaten it, knowing that you're just about to collapse. They're the pies that we're talking about here.
We started a feud about the difference between a meat and potato pie and a Cornish pasty. Incredible. I'm gonna have to try both and then I'll be the final judge. Whoa. I think. No, we've given out all of our clues. Sally, tell us what it is.
Well, today's mystery ingredient is courgette.
Courgette. A lot of people got that right. Brilliant. So zucchini or courgette, we were accepting both. But the winner that's come out on top today is Lee. So congratulations, Lee. It has been a load of fun, guys, today on the Thursday brunch. Thank you so much for being part of the Thursday brunch. Riyadh, it's a pleasure as always. So much fun with you.
Thanks a lot, love. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Sally.
And Sally Prosser of MyCustardPie.com, a pleasure as always.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun and tasty today.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.